ready.
We're ready.
Okay, the planning commission for April 22nd is,
Nobody?
I want to order a call. First order is the roll call. So we'll start with Mr. Gunn.
Just check my emails.
I know, I have my emails up, I don't have anything coming up.
Yes, here.
Tom Berman.
Here.
Bill Brannigan's here.
Mark Fulman's here.
Escobar's here.
And Escobar's here.
And the link you sent.
And Mr. Capri is not here.
Well, it's a regular session.
Why?
Can you just double check the codes on that?
I did.
Oh, looks like someone's coming through.
There she is.
That would get pretty nice.
Yeah, I did that already, make sure I sent it.
I mean, maybe he's interested in finally becoming a member.
Maybe he wants to become a member.
He told me no.
When I first became a member, I thought that he should apply before I did. And he was concerned about conflicts.
He doesn't want to do it.
He doesn't want to do it because occasionally we deal with some of his problems.
And Ms. Dill has.
Our visitors with us.
Ms. Dill. Are you alive?
Welcome, welcome.
Hi, I'm here, recovering from vacation. You know how that goes.
Okay, and Tracy's here, okay. First order of business is the approval of the minutes. Anybody?
I read them, I saw no errors. I didn't go with fine tooth comb, but I would move that we accept them for the regular meeting of April 8th, I think it was.
Yep, April 8th.
Second.
Any issues with the video links?
I didn't look at it.
Oh, wait a minute, Brolio has an issue.
No, I'm gonna say, if you made a motion to approve the video, then I'll go ahead and I'll second your motion.
I already did.
You did, okay.
Okay, all in favor of approving the minute, pardon me, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No opposition. Okay, citizens' public comment. There are no citizens here. We did get a couple public comments from Mark Arnold. He sent us two emails regarding the estuary project, which is not a part of the agenda, but for our reading pleasure, so that when we have that, we're doing. Okay, action items?
We do not have any action items.
Public hearings. We have one hearing. It's the second time we've had this. It's on file number 1-VAR-24. It's continued for Harbor Freight sign variance. Any additions from the staff report?
Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. As I noted in the materials, we didn't have anything else to add, and Ms. Steele also indicated via email that she didn't have any additional information to add at this time.
Okay. And since this is a quasi-judicial, I need to read this?
Yeah, I would read through the script and disclose anything essentially from since the last meeting.
Right, right. Okay. It's a script for a quasi-judicial hearing. This statement applies to all hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented toward the request being heard must be directed toward the relevant criteria and the Newport Comprehensive Plan, the Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the speaker believes to apply to the decision. The failure of anyone to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue will preclude appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, known as LUBA, based on that issue. An issue which may be the basis of an appeal to LUBA shall be raised not later than the close of the record or following this evidentiary hearing. Such issues shall be raised in accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. The failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of a hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. If such a request is made, then the hearing will be continued to a date certain and schedule set for submittal of additional testimony. The period for parties to respond to the new testimony and the period whereby the applicant can provide final argument. We would read a Zoom script, but we got to break into the Zoom. This meeting is being conducted by a Zoom video conference. Before we get started, I would like to provide staff a moment to identify individuals that have dialed in.
Thank you, Chair Brannigan. We currently have Tracy Deal, representative for the applicant, online with Jim.
Okay. I'd like to cover a few ground rules. Individuals on Zoom wishing to speak should use the raise hand feature, which can be found by clicking on the participants button on the bottom of a computer screen. The raised hand button on the bottom of a smartphone or by dialing 9 on a landline. I will call out the order of testimony in cases where multiple hands are raised. Please keep your microphone muted unless you are speaking. Press star 6 to mute and unmute the landline. Persons may participate by video or phone, and we can make the shared screen feature available for those that wish to make a presentation. Information shared with the commission in this matter is part of the record, and a copy of the materials will need to be provided to staff. At this time, I would ask commission members to disclose any actual or potential financial interest, bias, ex parte contacts, or site visits that they may have related to this agenda item. Anybody?
Drive by.
We're still all driving by it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, can't miss driving by it.
And I drove by it. We've all driven by it. I drove by at night when it was winter. At this time, here we go. If anyone present has an objection to the participation of any commissioner or the commission as a whole, please raise that objection now. I don't hear any. This is a quasi-judicial hearing for the purpose of considering file number 1-VAR-24, Harbor Freight sign variance. The Planning Commission may, at the request of a participant or on its own accord, continue the hearing to a date certain to provide an opportunity for persons to present and rebut new evidence, arguments, or testimony to the approval criteria. A few announcements I need to make before we get started on the public hearing. The hearing will proceed in the following order. Staff report, the applicant's testimony, persons in favor, persons opposed, applicant's rebuttal, at which point the record will be closed for public testimony. The commission will then deliberate questions and verbal decision. A final order and findings will be prepared for consideration at the next meeting. Okay, so at which point do we have any additional, since this is a continuation, anything else from staff?
Derek Douglas again, Community Development Director. I don't plan to go back through the entire staff report. You had a healthy discussion at your last hearing. I just would note again for the record, just so it's for this hearing, the variance as it stands now, when you include the pole sign, which there's no permit for, and the wall sign, where permit was erroneously issued, you're looking at 378.78 square feet of display area or 89.4% deviation from the 200 square foot maximum display area standard. The criteria which are outlined in the staff report again under 1010.130 is special hardship or practical difficulty. 1010.140, consistency with the purpose of the sign code, exceptional design, not significantly or leading to street level sign clutter or creating traffic or safety hazards. So the standards, those are the standards you have before you. And as I shared, based on the analysis that's included in the staff report, you know, from my perspective, the information in the record is not sufficient to support a variance of this nature. I can dive into the details if you have questions about that, but I think it was pretty clear at the last meeting as to the reasons. And then a smaller east-facing wall sign paired with a properly permitted freestanding pole sign would be the way to go with respect to providing travelers to Harbor Freight appropriate visual cues to find that location.
Any questions? Eric, do we have three matters before the commission tonight? The application for what we call a pole or monument sign, the sign on the building on the south side, and then the sign on the building on the east side, fronting Highway 101.
Yeah,
I mean, spoken?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. The east-facing sign, the south-facing sign on 6th Street is not a part. I mean, it is. It was properly permitted, and it's within the 200 square feet display area that's permissible for the building, portion of the building that faces 6th Street. So that one's fine, not a part of this at all. You have a variance request that includes the 96 square feet of pole sign area because that has not been permitted. The applicant has not pulled a permit for that. They've not applied for a sign permit for that. If they were to apply for a sign permit for that today without a variance, we would deny it because right now they're already over the 200 square feet maximum display area that's permissible in terms of the 101, US 101 frontage.
So the pole sign, I mean, since our last meeting, as I drive by, it now says Harbor Freight. It's a big kind of a red background.
Temporary fabric.
That's
sign.
The same sign that the lumberyard used to have. And has the applicant applied for a sign permit for the monument sign?
No. That what you see there is not has not been permitted by the city. Nor is it what they intend to install. That's a temporary display, not the permanent LED backlit display that they would like to put in there. Yes?
I'm a little unclear as to what the definition of a temporary versus a permanent sign is. If they left that one up indefinitely, what would be the implication?
We would enforce against that and require it to be removed. We could do that.
What about the one on the east side of the building next to the sign in question?
The wall sign?
Yeah.
Well, okay, variance aside, what are the city's next step would be on that would be to revoke the permit.
No, I'm talking about the smaller one that's fabric. It's pasted on that wall.
That would be on the south side of the building?
There is an
No, on the east side of the building.
The one facing Highway 101.
Right, but there's an additional what I would call a temporary sign there. It's about maybe 6 feet long, 3 feet high, something like that.
The one
right.
On the pole?
Mm-hmm. No.
On the building. Well, it's on the building.
Banner
it's
sign
like
on the building.
A banner.
I mean,
it's like a banner, sure.
I see what you're saying. A temporary display sign. I mean, you'll see that kind of stuff go up. And we can cover with Harbor Freight what the temporary allowances are. I'd have to go back into the code and take a look. That is not intended to stay up long term. It's just a short term banner sign, I believe, more or less announcing the opening, right, of Harbor Freight. I'm trying to remember what was on that one.
Exactly the same thing that's on the big sign.
Okay. Well, that's not permissible and will need to come down.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Then I hear any others? Okay. So we now move to applicant's testimony. So Tracy, you have the floor.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, I'm not aware of any temporary signs. That's where Zoom meetings put me at a grave disadvantage because I have not been able to visit the site to see the temporary signs, but I will instruct my client to remove those. And I will instruct them to go through the proper permit process to install any temporary signage for their grand opening. And I want to apologize for that because I honestly am not aware of anything. When we met last, we were left with the question, would Harbor Freight be willing to give up their pylon sign or their pole sign or freestanding sign, monument sign, whatever we're calling it, the ground sign? Would they be willing to give up their ground sign in an effort to keep the wall sign that's been installed to prevent any further cost to them to remove that wall sign and manufacture another sign and have another sign shipped and installed? And the answer to that question is why we tabled the meeting, so that I could go and find out what would they be willing to do. And ideally, they would like everything to remain in place, but I was able to get them to agree to not utilizing the ground sign and only having wall signage at this location.
Okay.
Question. Since that monument sign belongs to the building and not to Harbor Freight, would it just be a plain blank sheet of whatever?
The faces would just be plain white.
Okay, and is that allowed there?
What we would end up having to do is enforce against the property owner that it's an abandoned sign.
After how long?
I'd have to take a look at the code. I can't give you a specific answer in terms of that, but that's the direction it would go. There are provisions in the sign code that deal with abandoned signs.
Well, then,
but it would be against the owner, not Harbor Freight.
So the 200-foot limitation, is that based on the business itself or...
Just display area.
If we went back to the building owner and the building owner says, fine, I'll put up a sign that says XYZ Construction, here's our phone number.
No, it's 200 square feet of display area total. It doesn't matter whose display area.
Okay. Fair enough.
I have a concern. Last time we met, we discussed the wall sign that's exceeding the code limit. We discussed the pole sign, and we adjourned the meeting so that you could discuss with the client what accommodations they could make with the community in regards to the pole sign. I when I drove by the next day and I saw that there's a great big Harbor Village sign on the pole sign, on the monument sign.
Harbor Freight, not Harbor Village.
Strike that. Harbor Tools.
Right.
Harbor Village is our manufacturing home community. Mm-hmm. I kind of took it as an act of bad faith that you're here trying to get some relief for the sign that's too large. And you heard the testimony that you couldn't have both the pole sign and the too large sign on the building. And I drive by the very, very next day, and your client put up a very large sign on the pole, big red, Harbor Freight, and it's it was concerning. Again, I saw it as an act of bad faith on the part of your client, just to go willy-nilly putting up signs without following the code and the requirements that everybody else in the community has to follow.
And I completely agree with you. I take a stand on that as well, in agreement with you, that is definitely highly inappropriate for somebody to do something without a permit, and it is highly inappropriate for them to do something like that while we are negotiating this. But if I may, offer you an explanation. That what most likely has happened, I don't have contact with those people that make the decisions to do the installation. My contact is with somebody in a different department, and it takes a while for the information to travel from person to person. And so it is quite likely that the person that is in the process of making the decision that they're relaying to me, they did not take it upon themselves to relay it to the other person. It's the situation of the left hand not talking to the right hand. What I can do for you tonight is assure you that any approval or agreement that you make tonight, I will make sure that I personally convey to them and be as transparent as I can with staff that it has been conveyed to them very clearly that they are in direct violation and that it needs to be removed immediately. If it was up to me, it wouldn't be there. You know, it wasn't my decision to make. I didn't pull the trigger that said, hey, go there and do this. Nor did I know that it was done. I had no knowledge of it. If it was up to me, it wouldn't have happened. If it was up to me, a lot of things would have gone differently. I've been pulled into this situation.
May I interrupt for a moment, Tracy?
Yes.
This is real disconcerting to me. I believe that this commission is acting in good faith. We gave the continuance that you requested because we all had questions, both you and we. And yet it does not appear from what you just said that Harbor Freight is showing us the same respect that we are showing them. This does not appear to be that important to them to, one, not put you in contact with the right person, and two, whatever the train of command at Harbor Freight is, it has not been able to respond to you in 2 weeks' time. That does not show me due importance to Harbor Freight. Let me add to that, because I don't know where this is going to go. Last time, I asked if you were willing or if Harbor Freight was willing to remove part of the east-facing building sign, that which says Good Tools or whatever, the signs beneath Harbor Freight, I asked if those could be removed, and you said, no, they wouldn't do that, they couldn't do that. So my question to you is that are they legally held to keeping all of that sign up there to represent their brand, or is this just a position that they're taking that they're not going to move an inch?
It is part of their trademark target. It is something that they target for all of their stores, is to have this image, the image of what you see with the red background, the white letters with what they call the quality tools, lowest prices, that's called their tagline sign. And that tagline is part of their branding.
So is there some legal standing that prevents them from taking a portion of that sign down? Is there a legal standing to keep that sign up, all portions of it? Or are they just being a little tough?
No, they're not being a little tough. It is part of their trademark image. It is the image that they propose for all of their stores.
But it's not legally held. They don't have to. There's no law that says they can't take part of their branding down. Am I correct?
I would have to dig into that with a trademark lawyer. And a trademark lawyer would be able to tell me whether or not they can represent themselves without the tagline.
Well, I'm trying to help Harbor Freight here, but I'm finding it ever more difficult to help when we continue to see these reasons given by Harbor Freight.
You okay? Tracy, answer. Any other questions of Tracy Deal? No? Okay. At which time we have anybody who put persons in favor?
Can I? I guess maybe it's a question, maybe it's a proposal. We were focusing on potentially removing the monument sign, but I see a lot of complications if that's not used and becomes an abandoned sign and we've got enforcement issues. is the reverse possible? Did you have a discussion, Tracy, with your client about keeping the monument sign but removing the, or severely minimizing the east face sign, so you'd be in compliance with the 200 square foot requirement and the pole sign would still be used? Was that discussed at all?
It was discussed, and the response that I received was that they would prefer for the variance to include the wall signs and the pylon. However, if the variance could not include the wall sign and the pylon, then they would remove the branding from the pylon and install a white face. And if removing the branding and installing a white face was not suitable, then they would remove the head off of the pylon sign. But removing the wall signage is extremely costly, because that will involve facade renovation. And when you have customers entering and exiting the building, it is very difficult to renovate a facade around pedestrian traffic. And it will also be costly because they will have to order, ship, manufacture, and ship another sign to the tune of $35,000 to $40,000. So their most affordable remedy for this is to leave the wall sign intact and to eliminate the use of the pole sign.
Is there evidence that your sign contractor read our ordinance and applied the ordinance to the design of the Harbor Freight sign?
I'm actually very happy that you bring that question up. So my company operates, if you Google me, you can see my company. We operate a code research division. And code research is not something that we did for this project. We were not involved in the permitting process, nor were we asked to research the codes for this. There are very few companies that are hired to do what we do, and we're hired by all of the major brand companies to research the code. And we were brought into this process after the fact. So I have asked them, I need to know bluntly, did somebody do this knowing that this was the situation? And the response that I received was no. They really thought that the sign that was approved by the permit was okay to manufacture. That pulled the trigger on the manufacturing. That sign was manufactured and then shipped and installed. They really did not know that that sign was not going to be allowed until there was a site visit of some sort, that when Mr. Chocos indicated that it was the permit was issued in error.
I guess, Derek, based on that last few things that Tracy has told us, can we consider this to be a request for a 41% variance? And then should a request come in for that pole sign, that would be denied. I mean, what's the implication, number one, if they did take the head off that sign and they just let the pole in the ground? That's not an advantageous sign, is it?
You know, that's part of the sign structure. I don't know that we would buy off on just taking the head off of it, saying we've addressed it. So I think we're moving into an enforcement mode there to deal with that, you know, the situation. That's part of the sign structure for the pole sign. Whether or not you want to consider the variance asked, actually the variance as submitted, frankly, did not involve the pole sign. They did not apply for that, although they indicated that they would intended to do that after this issue was raised with compliance with the wall sign. I mean, so the application was for the wall sign alone, but even for that, you have to be able to find that the variance criteria had been satisfied. If you can't find that the variance criteria have been satisfied, then you can't grant the variance. So, I mean, you certainly can limit it to just the wall sign, east-facing wall sign, if you like. But again, you got to pull it back to the variance criteria.
So if the wall sign was within the 200 square foot limit, then that would open up the pathway for Harbor Freight to use the, with the proper permit, the pole sign?
Certainly, certainly they could, at cost, pair a wall sign with a pole sign where the aggregate area does not exceed 200 square feet. It would be, as Tracy said, additional cost. And we pointed out at the last hearing, there's a difference between whether or not something does or doesn't meet variance criteria and whether or not there's some potential liability issue that the city has for the permit that was issued. That's not something that you're looking to deal with. That's handled separately. We have a tort claims process for that. So I would really caution you to avoid going down that path. You know, if they feel that they have cause, they have a legal process they can pursue that's independent of variance to deal with that. So really what you have before you are, have the variance criteria been satisfied or not?
Commissioner East, do you have any thoughts or comments?
Well, it's unfortunate that nobody decided to, on their end, decided not to research this, or it didn't get caught in plan check, or it just kind of slipped through. And I don't know if this is a standard style sign that they put on all their projects, or if they're built custom for each building.
They're custom.
But
they're custom.
They are custom for every building.
Yes.
So they have their logo.
They're custom. The way the procedure is, we submit for permit, we get permit approval, we put the sign in production. So they're custom.
Okay, so this was custom built for the size of the building, for that front.
Yes. Yes.
John?
And that's why everybody's so upset, to be honest. That's why it's been, and Mr. Tokos can attest to that, there's been some, I'm sure there's been some heated conversations along the way, along the process, and it's because it's custom that it's not, can't just be pulled for another site.
I don't see a path for me to say yes to the variance request. I just don't. I don't see it being.
Let's wait till we have a motion and then we can discuss.
You know, what the consensus is before we have a motion. Don't want to make a motion that's not going to pass.
I don't know why not. We do that all the time. I
move that the request for the variance be denied. For the.
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any further discussions? We need to say why we are voting the way we're voting for the record. That's important for that we keep track of that. So, Don.
I guess I'll make 2 points. One is, if indeed this request is denied, I would hope that Tracy, you could talk with your client and convince them of the efficacy of having a wall sign and maintaining the monument sign and being within the code restriction of 200 square feet total, and figure out how to do that. Because otherwise, I sense we're going to have this enforcement / semi-light thing hanging over Derek's head for a while until the pole sign issue gets resolved. And that would be really unfortunate, because I was so happy to see this development occur and see this occupancy occur, critical piece of property, and then to have this happen is just super unfortunate. So that said, I don't see where there are mitigating circumstances here that's been presented that would lead one to believe that a variance is in order.
Larry?
I agree with John. I'm going to say I'll deny the variance.
I could see stretching an argument based on special hardships or practical difficulties with the cost extra costs that are involved in denying this permit. However, I think that far is outweighed by all of the other factors. And the strikes me that, you know, this chain has over 1,500 stores. And according to their website, they're looking at another possibly 200 locations. And I find it a stretch to believe that that particular sign could not be repurposed at another location with some extra effort, but nonetheless removed, shipped to another location, and then a new sign installed there, which would be not, you can't add up both costs, the cost of the original and the cost of the replacement. It's one or the other, and they were willing to spend that. So I will be voting to deny the variance.
Mr.
I would vote to deny this variance. I don't think Harbor Freight or their contractors did due diligence. I myself have been a victim of my own stupidity and not doing due diligence on a construction project, and it cost me 5 weeks of contractor time. So it is disappointing that there were mistakes made by the city. There's also a very big mistake made by Harbor Freight for not checking out the ordinance and doing their due diligence. Unfortunately, I also find the sign extremely loud, which is not a positive for the community. As I said, with the sign that they put on Samaritan, mariners will be able to see that 3 miles at sea. If this were facing the ocean, the mariners would see it at 5 miles. I think it's way oversized. I wish they had read the ordinance, but my vote would be to deny the variance, Tracy.
We found that the applicant didn't meet the criteria for the ordinance, and I was hoping there could be some accommodation between the monument and the signs on the building. And then the more I think about it, that monument sign, it could be made attractive. But tearing it down, that seems to almost be a waste. I think the applicant did not meet the criteria for the variance. The sign is oversized. When you look at it compared to the grocery store next door, you can see it's just massive compared to that. Looks like the Las Vegas Strip. So I think you know how I vote.
Okay. I would also vote to not permit the variance. You know, the variance is a huge variance, some 40% over what's required. Some of what you have to consider is that if we allow such a large variance this time, we're starting to set some precedents for other people to say, hey, you know, why can't I have that sign that big? You know, it's unfortunate that Harbor Freight did not take a look at the code and understand what was there so that they could instruct the sign maker. But you know, it's just too big a variance. You know, if it was 1%, maybe I'd have a different opinion, but yeah, not some 40-odd%. So I would also probably vote. So could we rephrase the motion?
I think that's been made in second.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
It was late.
Okay.
Do you need a rephrase?
No, we don't. Okay, so in the case file number 1-VAR-24, Harbor Freight sign variance, we have a motion. The motion is to deny. It's been seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? None. The motion carries.
So a final order and findings will be brought forward in, for your next meeting for you to ratify, at which point Planning Commission's decision is final, and Harbor Freight will then have a choice whether or not they wish to appeal it to the City Council. Tracy, I'll share with you those materials via email, so you have that information, you can share it with your client.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Tracy.
Eric?
Thank you.
Tracy, you did a good job advocating for your client. Sometimes the facts just don't help lawyers.
Yeah, well, I'm not a lawyer, so it doesn't help me anyway.
You did a good job advocating for Harbor Freight.
Thank you.
Come to Newport sometime and take a look at our good community.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Derek, do you have any flexibility to waive future permit fees for signs for Harbor Freight? Assuming they come into compliance?
No, they're not, those fees aren't that much. You know, really, sign permit fees aren't that much. You're talking about a few hundred bucks. But, you know, and that covers the plan review for what we need to do.
Okay.
So, you know.
Just thought we had, you know, some notion thing we could do to indicate it's still bad with that permit position.
No, I hear you. And that gets, but I think the process there would frankly be if they file a tort claim. But that's a choice they have to make. It's not something we do. And through that, you could potentially have some sort of negotiated, you know, agreement, at least in terms of cost, dealing with the costs and, you know, what the city was responsible for, what the sign contractor was responsible for, you know, what Harbor Freight was responsible for, that kind of stuff.
They have legal remedies and they can have
it. That's why I tried to emphasize that's out there. I don't like, I mean, but it is a reality. You know, that's what that's for. When somebody believes the city's at fault, you know, properly issued permit, somebody slips on a trail, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on. There are a number of you know, reasons people file tort claims against the city. They do have the legal remedy if they choose to do it. Or they could simply say, hey, look, you know, we're gonna modify it because we want to be done with it. Sometimes they just don't even want to bother. I mean, it's a large corporation. They may not want to bother with that. But, I mean, I know it's real money, but for them, that's not the kind of money that they wouldn't potentially. I mean, they have to make that judgment. Is it enough to hire lawyers and go down that tort claim path? I don't know.
Didn't that in the legislature fix that slip down a trail thing?
Yeah, at least temporarily. I think they did a temporary fix, and they're going to do a more permanent one in the long session. I think that's how that played out. But I believe that's in your packet, you know, in the legislative summaries that I attached.
Yeah.
So that was a nice segue. No, those I included two of them: the one from the league and one from DLCD. They're just for reference purposes. There's not anything that, I mean, if you're interested, look at them. If you're not, that's fine. But they're a nice summary of what was done. DLCD focuses on the land use related stuff. The league is a little bit more broad because it's picking up the full functions of, you know, city government and bills that relate to all kinds of stuff that are city government related. And they, you know, at times they'll tease a little bit about what's likely to come in the long session, you know, especially when you see some of the bills that didn't pass but had support. You know, I'll, for example, that SDC one that we talked about, which Rep. Gamba had support, got out of committee, just didn't get dealt with in a short session because it was a short session, and they just ran out of time. That SDC bill, which is going to come back, and that's the one where the state would create a fund to back up local governments. So if local governments were to be amenable to say SDC don't have to be payable until occupancy, so developers don't have to pull those SDC costs out of their construction loan, they can roll into their final financing, the state would then create a fund for the small percentage of developers who don't follow up.
Would the state put a lien on the property then at that point?
Potentially, See, again, I think there were some details on exactly how the enforcement would work that hadn't been fully fleshed out. And I think that was part of the reason why, you know, it slowed down. But, you know.
If Mr. Hargis was here, we could go red and white.
Remember Mr. Hargis?
He used to be the building inspector.
Yeah.
Eric has a question. We had the two email comments about the estuary plan. And I see it's coming up here. How much input does this body have or your office have? It would seem to me something like the estuary would be something that would attract the attention of the entire state. I mean, it's a statewide resource, not a local resource.
Right. Well, we're working within a box. You know, so statewide planning goal 16 kind of sets the parameters from what we can do, and the estuary management plan has been updated consistent with statewide planning goal 16. I think one of the key points here that Mr. Arnold has, and Gil Sylvian also has raised, is a desire for clarity, particularly with respect to aquaculture. But in other arenas as well, what constitutes minor development that doesn't necessarily invoke an involved permitting process? If somebody's swapping out a single pile, is that something we had to take them through a full formal estuary review and you know, and everything else that goes along with that? I think we can, you know, I mentioned to Gil just the other day, because he was here for a meeting we had with the Commercial Fishing Users Group, parking stuff. That I'll give him a draft, give him a chance to take a look at it. We can take a stab at further refining the definitions that are in goal or administrative goal, but we don't have carte blanche flexibility there, and I'll have to make sure anything we're doing is coordinated well with the Department of Land Conservation Development, because it would be precedent setting potentially.
Did OSU respond? I thought we were going to have some input on the issue from the folks at the Marine Science Center?
I don't have any input yet from Hatfield, OSU, on this kind of stuff. We're still working on this. That's why we didn't have a work session, and we've kind of pushed it down a little bit. But hopefully, now that we have a fifth Monday, which I don't have a council or planning commission meeting, we can chip away at this a little bit more. And I know Meg Reed's trying to carve out the time to help on the DLCB side. Gil said he's more than happy to take a look at some language. I can reach out to Bob Cowan and see who he thinks would be a good point of contact at Hatfield. I'm happy to do that and get their input as well. I think we can get to a win-win. I don't think what Mr. Arnold's looking for is outside this of the bounds. I think it's just he's looking for further clarity. And I don't think he got it. I don't believe he feels that he got it through the estuary management plan update. But we may be able to get there with the zoning code changes.
Okay, new business?
Yeah, no new business. Just unfinished business has a planning commission work program update. And then you have the director of comments. I did want to share with you with the city center revitalization planning effort. I am waiting to hear back from the consultant who is going to give us some dates for the kickoff meeting. So I'm just waiting to hear back from them so that we can begin to zero in on that and get that organized. So I've already sent them all of the advisory committee roster information. We have contacts for all of the businesses in the study area and the property owners within the study area. Pass that information along to them as well. And we're in the process of uploading the background data that they requested, so the GIS data layers and comp plan documents and other things that they want as reference materials and that they're entitled to as part of the scope of work, something we need to get to them. So we're working on that right now. Have been very busy in budget. I know a number of you are getting very busy in budget.
It's our weekend.
So it's hard to stay awake.
and have been pretty busy on a couple of advisor committees, one League of Oregon Cities executive committees on that one, which ultimately recommends kind of what the list of priorities should be after they find out what they should be surveying all of the different cities. But also on the Urbanization Advisory Committee for DLCD, where they're kind of taking a new look at maybe they need to retool the urban growth boundary rules a little bit. So last week spent some time discussing that, and really the point that I was trying to drive home, and which you guys had an opportunity to work on with the housing capacity analysis, is getting folks to actually think about constructability. I mean, we've had a lot of land within our urban growth boundary since it was originally acknowledged in 1982. There's still residential undeveloped land. It's just sat there for decades. And there's a reason why, and you saw it when we did the constructability assessment. Some of these properties, I mean, you're looking at $20+ million just to get the infrastructure to the property, let alone what the developer's going to have to pay, to serve, internal to the property, internal streets and whatnot. So some of these properties are just simply, they're not going to be developed. I mean, they may look nice on paper as residential, available residential land, but you're not going to see anything on it. And so getting that actually factored in, into the analysis so that you're really honing in on, when you're doing these studies, on land that is viable for construction, I mean, frankly, that's as big of a constraint as slope or wetlands or floodplains. I mean, at least from my perspective, but that's a push. That's a new thing that hadn't traditionally been viewed as part of your buildable lands inventory. I mean, they took the high bar. I mean, you can kick it out if you could prove it can't be served. But what's that mean? Can't's a very high bar. Sure, I mean, if you have 21 million sitting there, right? Sure, you could get there. It's okay. Anyway. I did want to mention, you will see, we just engaged the local government law group to assist us with the SB 1537 implementation. We have met, we've gone through that, the governor's housing bill and the adjustment provisions. And so our plan of attack is I should have a memo back from them within about 2 to 3 weeks, which I can share with you and the council. And then the thought is that we would then just go ahead and amend the existing ordinance that hasn't been adopted yet, ordinance 2222, which had our package of recommended changes. We'll just tweak that to address Senate Bill 1537. It's probably the most effective way to do it, given that legislation will be effective the 6th of June, so time is not on our side. So those are some of the things that are in the hopper. Okay. Oh, and we have a new, our council is negotiating with Nina Vetter, who would replace Spencer Neeble, assuming that the negotiations go well. Did any of you guys have a chance to participate in that interview process with the
I would like to.
Candidates?
I was too sick to infect others, so.
I wasn't sure who was able to get to some of the receptions or things of that nature. Okay.
We had out of town visitors, but I would have liked to. So the selection process is, they finished it up. I mean, they were working on it on Friday.
The bum did.
Yeah, it was pretty exhausting. On Wednesday of last week, we had Mike and I took all four of the candidates on a 2-hour tour of the city, and then we had the department. We were on the department head panel, so we also interviewed them the balance of the day and kind of wrapped that up about 6:30, a half hour into the parking advisory committee meeting.
That's crazy.
Which came in the tail end of that. So. She was clear number one candidate from the department head perspective. I can share that with you at this point, certainly. That was pretty much unanimity that Nina was top candidate of the group. I mean, we had the good fortune of having multiple qualified candidates, but she rose to the top. And so I'm quite happy that there was consensus on the council and elsewhere that they felt that she was the best candidate as well. So hopefully they can work it out.
She was the assistant city manager in Gresham?
She was the city manager in Gresham.
The city manager in Gresham.
For a period of time, yeah.
Did Eric apply?
Yes, I believe so. But yeah, she spent some time in Colorado, Puebla district.
It was a district.
It was a district of some sort in Colorado, and then was with Gresham for a few years.
Well, if she takes years to fill, ask her to stop by sometime so we can all meet her.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that'd be great. And I don't know how quickly this is going to go and whether or not she'll have an opportunity to pop in on anything before she officially takes the reins, assuming the negotiations go well. But we have a volunteer appreciation dinner coming up on the 15th. I hope you guys can make it. So there'll be some additional opportunities, you know, for her to start getting engaged with committee members and members of the broader community. Yeah, go for it.
And the flame detector is under that 756.